Welcome to America's Providential History Podcast, where we talk about the real story of America and explore the hand of God in our history. Now, here's your host, Stephen McDowell.
Hello, I'm glad you're joining us for this edition of America's Providential History Podcast. In the last few weeks, we have been looking at God's miraculous hand in the American Revolution. You know, God performed many miracles during the war because God was supporting the cause of American liberty. We saw how he worked in the evacuation of Long Island, using the weather to preserve Washington and his army, and then at the crossing of the Delaware River at Trenton in December 1776, we see again the hand of God, and we looked at him at the defeat of Burgoyne at Saratoga and how in response to that, the Continental Congress proclaimed a day of prayer and thanksgiving. But as we go into the winter of 1777 and 1778, one of the most important in our nation's history, because that winter was the turning point of the American Revolution. And during that winter, the American Army faced as great an ordeal as any army in history. Now, prior to its movement to Valley Forge in December 1777, Washington's army was an undisciplined mob with a few victories to show for their efforts. However, the next spring, those same men marched out of camp as a well-disciplined band committed to their general in the cause of liberty, and they were prepared for victory. So you might ask, well, what was the ordeal this army faced? How did such a change occur during the months at Valley Forge? And of course, Valley Forge was where the troops would winter. Generally, they wouldn't fight during the winter time. The British had chosen the city of Philadelphia to live that winter of 1777 and 1778. George Washington wanted to be nearby in case his troops were needed, and so he chose to winter at a area close to Philadelphia at Valley Forge. And so what brought about the great change from the time he marched in to out? Well, when the army entered Valley Forge, the troops lacked clothes, tents, and blankets. In fact, Washington wrote that being without shoes, their marching through frost and snow might be traced by the blood from their feet, and almost as often without provisions as with them. And their situation only worsened after December 19th. Now, Washington pleaded for supplies for his men from Congress. And in December 23rd, 1777, letter to Congress, Washington wrote that a number of men were confined to hospitals and in farmers' houses for want of shoes, lack of shoes. We have by field return this day made no less than 2,898 men in camp unfit for duty because they are barefoot and otherwise naked. In fact, about a third of all his troops were unfit for service, and this number increased as the winter progressed. Lafayette was that young French aristocrat who came and offered his services to George Washington and the cause of the American Revolution. But he wrote, "The unfortunate soldiers were in want of everything. They had neither coats, hats, shirts, nor shoes." Baron von Steuben, who was a Prussian officer who came and also offered his services to the American forces, but he wrote, "The men were literally naked, some of them in the fullest extent of the word. Hunger was even a greater danger." Lafayette wrote, "The army frequently remained whole days without provision. One soldier's meal on a Thanksgiving day declared by Congress was a half a gill of rice and a tablespoonful of vinegar." In mid-February, there was more than a week when the men received no provisions at all. A medical doctor, Waldo, who was there, gave this description. There comes a soldier. His bare feet are seen through his worn-out shoes. His legs nearly naked from the tattered remains of an only pair of stockings. His breeches are not sufficient to cover his nakedness. His shirt hanging in strings. His hair disheveled. His face meager. His whole appearance pictures a person forsaken and discouraged. He comes and cries with an air of wretchedness and despair, "I am sick, my feet lame, my legs are sore, my body covered with this tormenting itch." Well, due to this lack of food and clothing, hundreds of Washington's troops fell sick. Many men's feet and legs froze till they became black, and it was often necessary to amputate them. Now, during most of January and February, there were constantly more than 4,000 soldiers who were incapacitated as a result of exposure, disease, and nourishment. About one-third of his troops were unfit at all to enter into any kind of conflict. And in the midst of this very difficult situation, these troops persevered. Well, beyond this, the patient attitude with which they endured this misery was no less supernatural. On April 21, 1778, Washington wrote to a congressional delegate, "For without arrogance or the smallest deviation from the truth, it may be said that no history now extant can furnish an instant of an army suffering with such uncommon hardships as ours has done, and bearing them with the same patience and fortitude. Their submitting without a murmur is a mark of patience and obedience which, in my opinion, can scarce be paralleled." Well, you might ask, what could possibly have kept the army together through this ordeal? Frederick von Steuben observed that no European army could have held together under such circumstances. Well, how then could an inexperienced army stick together? Was it due to good discipline? Well, von Steuben stated, with regard to military discipline, no such thing existed. Could it have been the financial reward they would receive? Well, their paltry pay was already 4 to 5 months past due, and complete payment would never come from any of them. But most historians agree that the Army persevered at Valley Forge because of the troops' love of liberty and their devotion to their general, George Washington. Historian George Bancroft commented that love of country and attachment to their general sustained them under their unparalleled hardships. With any other leader, the Army could have dissolved and vanished. Washington's character and encouragement inspired the army to follow his example, and his heart was devoted to his men as well as to his country. From the beginning, he tirelessly traveled throughout the camp, his presence bringing strength to his men. After observing his naked and distressed soldiers, Washington said, "I feel superabundantly for them. And from my soul pity those miseries which it is neither in my power to relieve or prevent." Well, Washington knew that the cause for which they fought was worth any price, even the great suffering they endured at Valley Forge. Because they purchased liberty not only for themselves, but for the generations to come. That's who they were suffering and fighting for. We're the ones that have greatly benefited from the great sacrifice that they made. See, at Valley Forge, blood was not shed in battle, but still the army shed much blood. One historian, Henry Brown, wrote, "The blood that stained this ground did not rush forth in the joyous frenzy of the fight. It fell drop by drop from the heart of a suffering people. They who once camped here in the snow fought not for conquest, not for power, not for glory, not for their country only, not for themselves alone. They suffered here for posterity. They suffered here for the human race. They bore here the cross of all the peoples. They died here that freedom might be the heritage of all. You know, a great price has been paid for our liberty in many different ways. This is one of many ways our forefathers suffered and bled and gave of themselves and their lives to purchase freedom for us. Well, if Washington's character helped sustain the army, we should ask, well, what sustained Washington during this difficult ordeal? Well, this question could easily be answered by Washington's soldiers, because they knew his trust was in God. The army had frequently received orders from its general to attend church, to observe days of prayer and fasting and days of thanksgiving. Plus, he had secured chaplains for the army. Reverend Henry Muhlenberg, he's the gentleman who helped introduce Lutheranism into the Americas, American colonies. But Reverend Muhlenberg recalled how Washington, quote, rode around among his army and admonished each and every one to fear God, to put away the wickedness that set in and become so general, and to practice the Christian virtues. Now, almost every man in the army personally knew that his general regularly attends divine service in his tent every morning and evening and seems very fervent in his prayers, quoting from an eyewitness who visited Washington in the camp. Henry Knox was one who recounted that Washington frequently visited secluded groves to lay the cause of his bleeding country at the throne of grace. Now, a number of people have recounted the story of Isaac Potts. Isaac Potts was a Tory Quaker. Tories are those who sided with the British cause. He was a Tory Quaker who came upon Washington while he was on his knees in prayer in the woods. Now, George Washington Parke Custis, who was the grandson of Martha Washington, the adopted son of George and Martha, he grew up in the home of George and Martha Washington, and he wrote an excellent memoir of his famous grandfather that you all ought to read to learn firsthand account of George Washington. But he relates this story of Isaac Potts and how Potts later remarked to his wife. And so here's Potts. Potts was out, his home was near Valley Forge, and he was going in the woods and he heard this sound, and he told his wife. So he's on the cover of our book, America's Providential History. We have a painting of George Washington in his knees in prayer at Valley Forge. There's other paintings, stained glass window in the United States Capitol in the prayer room. There's statues depicting this, many different depictions of Washington in prayer at Valley Forge based upon not just Isaac Potts' testimony, but Henry Knox and others who saw him in prayer. But Potts relates how he had was traveling through the woods. He heard a sound. He came, and when he looked in the woods, he saw General Washington in prayer on his knees. Now, some historians have called this an anecdotal story, that it's not definitely known that this occurred or not, but certainly the testimony of George Washington Parke Custis, who, again, lived 18 years in the home of George Washington, was his grandson, adopted, really like an adopted son, because George and Martha raised him. George and Martha never had any children themselves directly, but Martha, from her first husband, had two children, and her son had four children, and the two youngest were raised in the home of George and Martha Washington after her son died during the American Revolution. And so he relates that Potts later remarked to his wife, he said, "If there is anyone on this earth whom the Lord will listen to, it is George Washington. And I feel a presentiment that under such a commander, there can be no doubt of our eventually establishing our independence and that God in his providence has willed it so. You know, President Reagan, in his many different speeches, remarked on this incident. On May 6, 1982, in his National Day of Prayer proclamation, President Reagan said, "The most sublime picture in American history is of George Washington on his knees in the snow at Valley Forge. That image personifies a people who know that it is not enough to depend on our own courage and goodness. We must also seek help from God, our Father and Preserver." In fact, you know, I mentioned the picture on the cover of our book, America's Providential History. It was painted by an immigrant from Scandinavia in the 1970s, Arnold Freeberg, who painted it as a gift to his new country, his adopted country. He said, "I wanted to give a gift to show my great appreciation for what the United States has meant to me." And that gift was a painting of our commander-in-chief, the man who led us to victory in the American Revolution and assured our establishment as a constitutional republic under our new U.S. Constitution, that this is how he wanted to depict that. And this is what President Reagan is remarking, that image personifies a people who know it's not enough to depend on our own courage and goodness. We must seek help from God, our Father and Preserver. And that picture depicts, I think, not only Washington's life well, but the spirit and the heart of the founders of America, because they were always proclaiming days of prayer and fasting. They pray personally, like Washington did, in secret, morning and evening. His tent was a place of prayer, as one observer remarked. But they would also publicly, because during the American Revolution, our Continental Congress proclaimed at least 15 days of prayer and fasting and prayer and thanksgiving, because they recognized, as President Reagan said, it's not enough to depend on our own courage and goodness. We must seek help from God, our Father and Preserver. And they did, personally, in their families, in their churches, and in civil government, civil societies, through their action and their proclamation. And so here at Valley Forge, in these most difficult of times, Washington constantly relied upon God and trusted in him for success. And God was faithful to answer his prayers and the prayers of so many others throughout the nation. And it was through Washington that God eventually established America's independence and secured the beginning of the most free and prosperous nation the world has ever seen. Well, how did God answer Washington's prayer? Well, one miracle occurred that winter that helped to eliminate the army's near-starving situation. As you said, you know, they didn't have enough to eat during that time. They were dependent upon individuals in the area or states to send supplies. One historian describes this miraculous event this way. "One foggy morning, the soldiers noticed the Schuylkill River seemed to be boiling. The disturbance was caused by thousands and thousands of shad, which were making their way upstream in an unusually early migration. With pitchforks and shovels, the men plunged into the water, throwing the fish onto the bank. Lee's dragoons rode their horses into the stream to keep the shad from swimming on out of reach. Suddenly and wonderfully, there was plenty of food for the army." Have you ever been fishing with pitchforks and shovels? Well, Washington's troops did, because they looked out and miraculously the water was full of fish way before they would ever migrate upstream. So God had provided. Interestingly enough, just not long before this incident occurred, you know, as I mentioned, that people in the area would just send supplies. They knew the troops were suffering, starving, and individuals would send what food or they could to help them out. And in one of these shipments, they received a large supply of salt. And they thought, well, what good is this salt going to do us? We have no food to preserve using this salt. That was a method of keeping meat preserved for a long time. But so they added the salt. But then not long after that, they had thousands and thousands of fish that they caught. And they were able then to use the salt that they had received to preserve the fish and provide them a food supply for weeks to come. That was one answer to prayer, a miraculous supply of food. But God's providence could also be seen in the arrival of Baron von Steuben at Valley Forge on February 23rd. No one could have been more valuable at the time because Steuben trained and drilled the men into a well-disciplined army. You see, he was a professional soldier, and most all the everyone who fought for Washington, these were just farmers and others who took up their arms to serve in the cause of liberty, but they had not been drilled. They didn't understand the disciplines of a soldier. And so von Steuben's rigorous instruction gave the troops confidence in themselves as soldiers, even as Washington had given them confidence as men. So not only had godly character and strength been forged and tempered within the army, suffering these great ordeals, but military skill had also been imparting to them at last. And this was vital for the future conflicts because many of these men who went through Valley Forge, they're the ones that form the core of many of the conflicts that Washington would enter in after this time. And they had the discipline and knowledge and skill how to be of greatest value. Well, another providential event that occurred that winter was when France became an ally to America. In a previous podcast, I talked about the miraculous surrender of Burgoyne at Saratoga and how one military historian called this one of the seven most important battles in the history of the world. And the reason that was is because of that victory, France then began to think, hey, these Americans possibly could win this conflict with our arch enemy, the British. And so France decided we're going to become an ally of America. And this meant much needed money and additional troops, especially a navy, which America didn't really have a navy, would pour into this new nation. And so the Continental Congress acknowledged this miracle as the hand of God when the representatives declared a national day of thanksgiving on May 7, 1778. At Valley Forge on May 5th, Washington had proclaimed, quote, it having pleased the almighty ruler of the universe propitiously to defend the cause of the United American States, and finally by raising up a powerful friend among the princes of the earth to establish our liberty and independence upon lasting foundations. It becomes us to set apart a day for gratefully acknowledging the divine goodness and celebrating the important event which we owe to his benign interposition. You see, Washington, as well as the Continental Congress, recognized that God raises up nations and puts down nations. We see that in Acts chapter 17. And here he was. This was God who had raised up France to come to our aid and assistance, a vital aid and assistance for our victory in the American Revolution. So Washington issued a proclamation, we're going to give thanks to God, celebrate him as the one who brought about this, and the Continental Congress did the very same thing. And so the troops' survival, the molding of a disciplined army, Washington's amazing leadership, and all the miraculous occurrences during that winter at Valley Forge can only be attributed to Almighty God. George Washington certainly acknowledged him in the events of the war. He wrote in 1778, looking back over the first 3 years of the war, the hand of providence has been so conspicuous in all this that he must be worse than an infidel that lacks faith and more than wicked that has not gratitude enough to acknowledge his obligation. And so Washington clearly saw God's providence. The hand of God was involved in all these things, miracles that I've some we've mentioned, this events at Valley Forge, and so many other things. And if some years later, he wrote again, reaffirming the same idea. He said, quote, "The man must be bad indeed who can look upon the events of the American Revolution without feeling the warmest gratitude towards the great author of the universe, whose divine interposition was so frequently manifested in our behalf." So here's Washington looking back over all these events. He lived through the valley, the winter at Valley Forge, and all the other miraculous things that we've talked about, and there will be others that occurred after these dates as well. And he said that this is obvious. The hand of providence is conspicuous, and if you can't see this, you're worse than an infidel that lacks faith and more than wicked. And another time he wrote, "You're bad indeed." So today, these words of Washington indict a lot of modern historians because they ignore the hand of providence in Washington's life and the events of the American Revolution and in our history. But as we've seen in previous podcasts, as we cover in many of our books and writings, is that the hand of God, the providence of God, is conspicuous. It's obvious. Everybody saw it. Individuals, they proclaimed days of prayer and fasting, Washington and his orders to his troops. It's clear to see. But unfortunately, the bias of many modern historians ignore the hand of providence, the hand of God at Valley Forge, in the American Revolution, and the founding and colonization of America. God's hand is evident. So I don't want George Washington to indict me today, calling me worse than an infidel, more than wicked, bad indeed. And so in so many of our writings and this podcast, that we acknowledge the hand of providence, because God himself history is his story. He's the one directing events of history to accomplish his plan and purpose for mankind. And to those who look with eyes open, it's very clear, it's very plain, becomes very evident. And this is one reason why our Americans today aren't being taught history. Because if you look, you don't have to look too deep, especially if you read primary source documents, it becomes evidently clear that without God, there would be no United States, that he was at the very center of working and directing and moving in order to bring about his purposes for mankind and giving birth to the United States of America. This was a vital part of his plan to show the world, here's a nation built upon Christian liberty, a nation that looked to God and the truth of his word. And they didn't do it perfect. They certainly had problems and challenges and things to overcome. But as you read their words, if we look at their laws and institutions, if we look at what motivated them, we look at stories like this at Valley Forge, it's very clear, as Washington said, that we can see the hand of God, and we need to give thanks to God. And as President Reagan said, that this image of Washington seeking God and crying out to God, it shows that it's not enough to depend upon our own courage and goodness. We must also seek help from God, our Father and Preserver. Well, thank you for joining us on this edition of America's Providential History Podcast. If you want to learn more, go to our website, providencefoundation.com. I would encourage you to pick up our book, America's Providential History. That gives a lot of the stories that we've been covering in this podcast or in that book and much more. But we have many other resources, many other books that you will find useful as you learn of how God has moved in history, and especially in American history, to accomplish his purposes. Well, join us next week. We're going to take a look at more of God's hand, especially in the American Revolution. After that, in the founding of the American Constitutional Republic, and see how God was at work bringing about our U.S. Constitution. Well, have a great week. God bless you.